Right now it is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal, a time where we get together with John and Janet, and we take a look at the stories that they are following, and we say good morning to Janet and John this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. You know, before we get started, I want to see if I've noticed something that that seems to be a little different to me that I really think is pretty cool. It seems now on your front page of the paper, you take one story and you pick a topic, like today it's land trust, and you go through a pretty thorough story on land trust. Has that been a change, or is that just because these certain stories have come up like this?
Well, I think that's an attempt on the part of the paper to look at bigger issues and topics in the northwest corner. We did one last summer on labor, and was a couple, I think it was a 3 or 4 part series on how the labor market had changed due to the pandemic, as well as a result of supply chain problems, but then had to do with labor shortage and people deciding to work differently. So we do that. We just take a look at deeper issues in the community, which I think is, and especially love to look at nonprofits this way.
All right. Thank you for the explanation. I just seem to notice. I just think it's a great way, once again, to have local people get an idea about the local nonprofits.
Yeah, and I'll say we're so fortunate to have Deborah Alexinis writing for us, because she's the one who did that labor series, and she's worked on this, and she's really good at digging down into the deeper stories. And anybody has ideas of what she should look at next? Let us know.
You know, it's interesting because I've teamed with the about a year ago with the Foundation for Community Health, and they put me in touch with a lot of nonprofits so we could, you know, do the inner workings on that. I just think it's something that local media should expose, everything that goes on here in the nonprofit vein and in the vein that is community service and serves the public as a whole. And it's not what you would call news, if you know what I mean. So
also, as you know, the Lakeville Journal hangs around the house for about a week.
Yep.
So hope somebody can take a little bit of time to maybe read a longer story. Makes sense.
Yeah. Well, let's go with this land trust story about the collaboration and how they are gaining ground.
This is a story that was really born out of a report that was done on the pace and collaboration among all the Northwest Corner land trusts, and so it's the first and one and only region in the state to basically track and prepare data on the pace of its conservation efforts. One of the things that is well known in Connecticut is that almost for every town there's a land trust, and that's great, except that there are ways in which they can really collaborate and increase their effectiveness in serious ways. So this story looks at that report and how they have found through collaboration ways to gain greater expertise, more funding, credibility as an organization, and also leveraging technology. One of the things they do now is among the groups they share mapping expertise. So, and also looks at the momentum that has been building and how they see things coming in the future. Story also focuses on how students are being drawn into this process. So it's an overall, it's a very, very thorough, and it's only the first part. We're going to have the second part of this story focusing more on the land itself next week.
All right, and right next door to that is the story of Sharon Hospital, New Vance Health, Save Sharon Hospital, and the state of Connecticut. That hearing really was, as your headline points out, a marathon hearing.
Right, and we were there for the duration. This story we've talked about even last week on the radio a little bit. This was everybody, you know, including the kitchen sink, in on the topic, and it lasted for 11 hours on December 6th, and the focus really was both sides coming together. Save Sharon Hospital has become an intervener, so they were able to very actively participate with their own legal staff in this thing. State representatives selectmen, everybody was in, the lawyers from both sides. So this story looks at sort of a long rendition of what happened on that day, and we will continue to follow this story.
All right. This is an interesting story because it goes along with the conditions we live in, and this one's also by Patrick Sullivan. We heard this as being spoken at in our video of the Board of Education meeting. Region 1 really is in serious need of substitute teachers.
Yes, and the idea here is that the assistant superintendent has sort of called out, you know, to anybody who has qualifications to get in touch. They can possibly develop waivers for anyone who doesn't have the exact requirement to become a teacher or a bachelor's degree to become a teacher. Retirees are also welcome to apply. So there really is a shortage of substitutes, and it's a serious one. The other thing that came out of this Region 1 meeting was this sort of notion that the projected growth of the student population over the next decade is going to be modest, and over the next few weeks, we'll hear from the individual school boards on what their projections look like in terms of student growth.
Yeah, it's and you know, it didn't help also with COVID, with absences of teachers going on, to take a problem that probably was a small problem and turn it into a rather large problem. But
right.
Interesting.
And the other thing to mention here is that there are going to be recruiting events in January. January 4th in Sharon, January 6th in Kent, and January 10th in North Canaan. So anybody interested should get in touch.
You know, you see how the schools were affected in Region 1. You've got substitute teachers, and we had problems with hiring bus drivers. It really is a serious problem when you live in an area like this where the population used to participate in a lot of these things, and they don't anymore. You know, Governor Lamont has made headlines. He's looking to extend and make more common the tax cuts for people making up to $100,000 or $200,000 in the state. But also, according to one of the officials for the governor, heating aid grants for families are going to increase this winter because, quite frankly, the fuel prices are going to skyrocket.
Right. The amount of federal aid that is allocated is pretty much not growing in the same pace as the higher fuel costs. So this story looks at, with our partnership with the Connecticut Mirror, on how the state government is going to somehow facilitate a little bit of state aid through this winter. The benefit per family that's in need could range from $250 to $600 per household, depending on income and things. But the story takes a look at the political discussion about providing financial help to families to heat their homes this winter.
It's going to be a big problem. We'll see what happens, especially the way this winter seems to be starting off now in the past 2 weeks.
The winter came all of a sudden.
So hello there. That's exactly right. January 10th, a time where you can purchase cannabis legally in the state of Connecticut. Moving a bit slower here in the northwest corner, though.
Yes, I think so. I think the closest area is Torrington, but the several towns have been having conversations about this. The other thing that's pointed out in the story is that sales are going to continue to expand in coming months. We don't know exactly where yet, but there will be nine, you know, medical marijuana dispensaries. There are now nine, and there will be probably nine or so more recreational. You'll be able to buy a quarter ounce, and those who have medical needs can buy up to five. So they're limiting it to a quarter ounce so that they don't crimp the supply for those who are using it for medical purposes.
All right, moving on, a story about in Cornwall, the state has acquired 539 acres in Cornwall.
Yes, this is, I think the state is the biggest landowner, if you want to call it that, in the state, in Cornwall. I think the story points out, Gordon Ridgway says that there's more than 6,000 acres. This 539-acre parcel is going to be connected, it's connected to what it already owns. There was some concern about, you know, how this is going to affect the town itself in terms of revenue, because this is, there's no tax base for state land. But Ridgway explained that they will not see their taxes go up, mostly because this is not going to change the tax base. So this is land is one of the big assets up here in the northwest corner, and whether you're talking about whether the state owns it or the land trusts have it, it's, land is a big deal up here.
Absolutely. What was that? Yeah, they're not making any more of it. It's a good investment. That's for sure. That's for sure. On the other side of the coin in Cornwall, they celebrated that with the holiday rec party in Cornwall.
Yes, they had a holiday rec party, and it was really a sweet experience of having Santa there, and the Grinch was there, and the children were enjoying themselves, sponsored by the Parks and Recreation Department. And there was a whole sort of attempt by, the Grinch to steal the presents, and Santa got his helpers to help him out. So it's kind of sweet to look at these grammar school children thoroughly enjoying themselves in a holiday event like this.
You know, I love this. It's developed over the past 10 years where students in Region 1, and this happens to be in Cornwall, get into filmmaking and get into filmmaking with a historical perspective. And you've got a story about a student from Cornwall making a film of a distant relative, a sixth grade uncle.
Yes, this is a story about the legacy of John Sedgwick, who is a Cornwall legend. And he was, his sixth, well, I don't even know how to explain this, but there's an eighth grader named Simon Marco who created a documentary based on his relative, Major General John Sedgwick, and it's called Your Affectionate Brother, Major General John Sedgwick, and using archived photographs and letters, he created this film. And Sedgwick is his sixth great uncle on the mother's side. Can't figure that stuff out, but that's the case. And this is a really sweet story about the early days in Cornwall, off to West Point, Mexican-American War. He was served in every battle in the Mexican-American War, and then in the Civil War, he was injured with a gunshot wound and eventually died. So it's a great story, as you point out.
All right, and we'll keep it in Cornwall for the Housatonic Valley Regional High School educator, Broadman, who won a National Teacher Scholarship Award.
Yes, Rennie Boardman, I have to say, is one of 33 agricultural educators in the U.S. receiving this 2022 award, and it's a scholarship that really tees up some further education and experience for him.
On the next page, before we go back to Cornwall, let's go to Salisbury. They've approved funding for an affordable housing home, which is always a step in the right direction.
Yes, there are two. There's a home on East Main Street that has been acquired by the Housing Trust, and they are renovating it now, getting it ready for occupancy. So the selectmen, handed $10,000 to the from the Affordable Housing Fund to supply renovations to this dwelling. And then they also contributed $20,000 toward the construction of 10 new units at Sarum Village 3 on Cobble Road.
All right. And you don't think of Cornwall as a place where you have windows for stores, but yes, they do. They had their 12 windows for the 12 days of Christmas.
Yes, this was 12 windows in West Cornwall in downtown have been transformed for the season with 12 days of Christmas decorations. There's also basically a pop-up, artisan pop-up shop at the Wish House featuring the work of 9 local crafters, including artist Terry Lefferts. So it's another example of holiday spirit, thriving in West Cornwall.
And the 12 by 12 art show came back in Falls Village, and wow, what a crowd they had for that.
I know. There's a photo that's in the paper that shows the wall, one long wall that's filled with the 12 by 12 artwork, and just opposite there must be 25 or 30 people jammed in there looking at it. This was a show that has existed before, and it what it boils down to is a 12 by 12 showcase of individual pieces of art that are priced fairly, and $150, and apparently a lot of the works, some two dozen, have been snapped up within no time.
You know, I want to go to an ad, and I'm sure we're going to get to additional news coverage of this, and I know I want to interview. Women's Support Services has come such a long way, and to me their name was restricting. So there's an ad that's in the Lakeville Journal that Women's Support Services has a new name, Project SAGE. This is really interesting. SAGE stands for Support, Advocate, Guide, Educate to End Relationship Violence. I think there's some stories ahead for both the Lakeville Journal and for us here at the radio station on that name change.
I couldn't agree more, and it's on page 7. You can take a look there, and
yeah.
A little brief description.
Yep. North Canaan, they're eyeing the Camp Brook acreage.
Yes, the Camp Brook acreage is something in the vicinity of about 25, 27 acres, stretches from behind the Snack Shack and State Line Pizza, going south on the eastern side of Elm Street, all the way down behind a bunch of houses. And at one point, it was a fairly exciting frisbee park, frisbee tournament park, and there were actually some tournaments held there. Things have sort of fallen apart. But right now there's this complicated state auction that has been held up because one agency, DEEP, wasn't happy with what the DOT had done with it. So right now the selectmen are working with some help from some attorneys to figure out how they can just get the land for themselves. And it would be part of a really wonderful North Canaan camp, recreation area.
All right, I want to move on to the opinion pages. And, Janet, I think this is a great idea. It's kind of an expansion of the role, but to bring editorials back, but because you're a nonprofit, you can't do that, but you feature a guest editorial.
That's right. Actually, Marshall, the way you described that isn't correct. We can't do endorsements.
Yep.
Of political candidates,
yeah.
And editorials, but we have an editorial every week in the,
yeah,
paper. And as a matter of fact, you know, we did not endorse this year for the first time, but certainly do editorials every week. And we're really happy to have Lloyd Baruti of Lakeville have his voice on the page this week. He wrote a very interesting piece about the slogan and title of the Save Sharon Hospital Group. Please do give it a read. It's well-worded, it's concise, and fascinating.
I think that will be the fertile ground for many, many letters to come.
that's right. And, you know, we will continue to consider guest editorials,
yeah,
as we move forward, and certainly are open to that. But, yeah, I'll repeat that we do have editorials every week in both papers.
All right, and once again, a nice selection of different letters to the editor also.
That's right. We have Caroline Birchfield talking about what a year it's been for Noble Horizons in Salisbury, and Ellen Cockerline, very practical advice, press the button to cross the street, give that a read. Nat and Kathy Benchley, really grateful for the care they received when they had a very bad day. And, you know, there are all different topics, but really, based on the holidays, it's nice to see some good thoughts and wishes moving forward. We also have from Mac Gordon, how to consider a live Christmas tree. And if people have trees already and they're starting to get a little dried, you know, this column may convince you to take a different approach.
All right, and of course, you've got the editorial cartoon from Peter Steiner which I, once again, one of the first things I always look when I go to the Lakeville Journal to see what's there. And then we can move back and go to Compass, because one of the main stories that Alexander deals with is Five Points Gallery and where they've gone in the past 10 years. It's pretty amazing.
This is a really great story about the 10-year history of the Five Points Gallery, and it reflects really, it's a good story about the vitality of the arts in this northwest corner, because this was something that started as essentially a, you know, an experiment in a vacant building, and now it's a really thriving thing on Main Street down there. It's a good story. We also have there's a by the way, it's in Torrington. We also have another look at something going on in the classroom, which is just yet one more example of the sort of interest and vitality of the arts up here. There's a sophomore at Hoosie who is curating a show that is of Sarah Davis's work, and it will be open for the public today from 2:30 to 5. So today's the day to go, and she is a sophomore who hopes to continue to work in this field. A couple of other items in the Tri-Corner, you know, calendar, but it's a very strong Compass this week.
All right, and what I don't want to miss is that the fact that we talked about Housatonic football, how that came back with the co-op that they have with, you know, with Gilbert, and then we move on. Now you've got a nice story about, first of all, you've got the list of the Housatonic Fall Sports Awards, and then Mountaineer basketball is back.
Yes, this is a real teaser to the season's coming up. This was a scrimmage between the Dover Dragons and Dover Plains and the Hoosie Mountaineers. The official season begins today with Hoosie against Northwestern in Winsted, and there's another game coming up on the 20th. But this is the beginning of the season of the indoor basketball.
All right, and Janet, I'll let you come on here because we're approaching, of course, Christmas, and I know there's got to be some early deadlines coming up.
There are, and I want to remind people that we do not publish the last week of the year, so there won't be a neither newspaper will publish between Christmas and New Year's, and because of that, we have early deadlines for the first week of January's issue. Do keep track of that. They happen next week. We have it listed in the paper, but it's early deadlines for letters and for especially classified ads you want to get in.
All right.
Actually, we'll take letters that first week of January, too.
All right. Well, that is a look at the paper today. And once again, we just touched on some of the stories with the Lakeville Journal of Military News. TriCornerNews.com is the web address. Guys, I guess we'll speak to you next week, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Enjoy the snow and the rain and the sleet. It's coming up.
That's right. Thank you for telling us what it will be and keeping us alerted to it.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thanks.
In the Lakeville Journal. As I said, you can find them at tricornernews.com, but you can also find them on our on-demand page with This Week in the Lakeville Journal, and that's at robinhoodradio.com. Click on on-demand, click on This Week in the Lakeville Journal.